Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. This is Podcast 558, live from North Dakota at the Pipeline Protest. More about that shortly in Podcast 558. Well, we're getting to be that time of year again when companies large and small start doing team building exercises, usually right before Christmas or right after the first of the year. So I'm going to put something in your head when it comes to team building exercises to remember, especially after the first of the year if your company does this. What do they do? Most companies, they go to some hotel someplace and you drink cold coffee and you eat bad sandwiches, or you might actually head off to some adventure, which is fine for the company athlete, but it turns into really a terrifying experience if somebody has to walk across coals, even if they are in Hawaii. So if you don't want to have to take the whole company to Hawaii, if you don't want to have to take the company to something boring like some hotel room for a conference, let me suggest a team building exercise you can do right here in the Twin Cities at Brush Studio in the West End in St. Louis Park, where there's plenty of parking. What is Brush Studio? They do events, corporate events, in a relaxed and social setting. What happens is an artist guides your team through a featured painting step by step. I talk a lot about how we have a much more diverse workforce these days. The boat trip or the hunting trip or the dinner someplace or the hotel room may have worked fine with your father's generation, but it's not going to work fine given today's diverse workforce. It isn't paint by numbers. An artist guides people through the painting. They actually paint a painting, and people come away feeling great about what they do and how they do it. And the thing is, Brush Studio events are designed for left brain people to bring out the right brain, and that means ideas. And it's so much better than spending all day in a conference room or having to fly everybody to Hawaii or anything like that. There's room for 55 people plus catering from Crave in the West End at Brush Studio, and they have 22 brands of beer or more and an extensive wine collection. So here's what you do. Check out the Brush Studio banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page. If you click on it, it'll take you to their page. They've got video that shows what goes on. It really is a great team building effort. Give them a call, 952-236-1700, 952-236-1700, or like their Facebook page, and they can take it from there. Brushstudio.net. Before we get started, I'm going to mention that the way I do what I do, whether it was covering the presidential primaries, covering local stories, or whatever it is, when I walk up, I'm rolling. I am rolling tape pretty much all the time. There isn't a time when my tape machine is off. And today, with the pipeline protest, they don't call it that, by the way. They call it what they call it, and you'll hear this. They have a lot of rules about what you can and cannot do. Now, these are very earnest people. They mean well, I think, but you can't tell me when and how and if I can record. I'm rolling all the time. That's just the way it is. So I had a great time today. I learned a lot. And I got an interview with Myron Dewey, who is kind of a spokesperson, loosely held term for the people that are kind of organizing this protest. But you're going to hear, and you're going to have to listen closely because the way it was done, because I basically concealed the tape machine because I knew they were going to tell me to turn it off. So you're going to hear some stuff that I think will be educational. And I think the interview will be educational. And then I'm going to close with a balance because I'm going to interview somebody who works in the oil industry, Eric Nelson, who works for Baker Hughes. And he's a chemist, does chemical engineering stuff for them. And he is not a spokesperson for that company. He's just a guy who is interested in the pipeline. I got his number through a friend, and I just want you to hear a little bit of balance from all that you're going to hear today. So it all starts with me driving up first to the forward gate. There's a forward protest or a sort of a scrim of tents. You pull up to that, and you don't have to stop there, but you do because you think that's the protest. You talk to them. They are wearing masks. All those guys are wearing masks. You can't see them. They will not tell you their names. Then you get to the actual protest, which is actually pretty large, and you pull in the gates, and you're going to hear the guys at the gate, the guards at the gate, talking to me, but you're also going to hear somebody talking to them through the two-way. So somebody's watching what's going on, but you can't see them, and they're telling them what to do. And then we're going to go through the media tent, where we're going to hear a rather compliant media talking to the person that's coordinating all that. And then I'm going to head out and look for Myron Dewey, who I end up talking to. And I'm not passing judgment on the issue. I'm not passing judgment on whether the pipeline's a good idea or not a good idea. That's something that you're going to have to decide. This public event is getting an awful lot of media from across the world. You've got reporters from all over the world there. You have famous Hollywood people there from time to time. Some of them stay at the casino, which I think is interesting. They're not necessarily in tents. That's one of the things I learned. It's kind of a festive atmosphere, sort of people just kind of hanging out. And if you get the chance to go, you should go. I think it's an interesting experience. I'm not passing judgment on what I think is going on there or whether I agree, but I will say this. It's very difficult to get a straight answer to a straight question at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest. We have stopped at the pipeline protest in just outside of about 5 miles north of Cannonball, North Dakota. Beautiful rolling land, big sky, beautiful clouds, kind of a scrim of tents and flags, at least the very first thing that I've seen. So I'm going to get out and walk down there and talk to some people, see if anybody will talk to me, and we'll find out what's going on.
Come on in.
What's going on?
Well, I'm a podcaster, and I've just swung out to see what was up. Is this the protest here?
Yeah. No, so this is the, where are you coming from?
I came out from Minneapolis.
Oh, you just now got here just today?
Well, I'm actually going to Seattle, so.
Oh, did you come from the main camp?
Pardon me?
You go to the main camp?
Yeah, I want to go up to the main camp. Is this it? This isn't the main camp.
Yeah, the main camp. This is the front line camp.
Okay.
Main camp is just 2 miles down the road.
Okay. Anything you can tell me?
About what?
Well, I'm doing a podcast about this stuff. So,
winterizing, getting ready for...
You guys are winterizing, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You know, getting stronger structures and getting organized and just preparing for them to start working on this side.
Okay, so, well, great.
Yeah, so this can't get swept anytime, you know? So,
all right, well, I'll head up, man.
So it's kind of risky here.
What, know? Just because of the road or what?
No, because law enforcement. They can come sweep us anytime they want, you know?
What?
I said they can come sweep us anytime they want. Everybody here is arrestable.
Yeah.
So it's kind of more dangerous.
So everybody's here or what? Arrested?
Yeah, no, everybody here is arrestable.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's kind of dangerous too.
So do they arrest people?
Yeah, they arrest people. But
now, why is it dangerous?
Because you know they got their missionaries out there, in their camps, and they
where are the missionaries?
They're out here. They out there scout during the night times. They keep an eye on our camps, you know.
Missionaries.
Yeah.
From what?
I don't know.
So a church, or are we talking about church missionaries?
They're hired from private security. They're hired from DAPL.
Oh, I
see. Keep an eye on us.
Why do you call them missionaries?
Because they're hired people.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah, they're trained and they're professionally trained for situations like this, especially in war, you know?
So they come out and they talk to you, or what?
No, they don't come out here. We don't get along with them.
Right.
You know? They want to get at us, you know, we're trying to get at them, you know?
Right. So,
that's what brought the National Guard here, is the balance between us and public safety.
Okay.
So National Guard is taking no sides. They're just here for, you know, safety hazards and public safety. But for now, we have no word that they're trying to make aggressive lethal force against us. So everything is okay for so far.
So have they shot anybody or anything like that?
No shot, no one got killed. No.
Well, that's good.
So that's what we keep an eye on, 24/7 security, you know?
So you're watching them and they're watching you, basically.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
It's excitement, you know?
It's gonna get crazy down here when it gets cold, though. I mean, this is going to be...
That's where they're going to try to hit us whenever we're at our weakest.
Right.
It's cold. So we're trying to prepare for that also and get more people this way and get stronger structures.
What's your name?
My name?
Yeah.
I can't give you no name.
Well, you got my name on the side of the truck.
Yeah.
Bob.
All right, man, Bob.
Thank you. I'm going to head up.
Yeah, go down there. They got Hollywood down there. Everyone's famous. All right, Bob.
Not me.
All right, Bob.
Thank you.
Beautiful country, though.
It's just, like I said, kind of rolling hills, really just little, you know, more than rolling hills. I mean, it's hilly. Streams and rivers running through. We still have a little bit of color. You know, it's that sort of fall look to everything. He said, this camp is Hollywood. You're going to go up to a lot of famous people down there, so. Here we are. Big, this looks like the air show. There's a lot of people here. So here we go. I'm rolling because I don't want to, when I pull in, I want to make sure I get whatever I encounter right away on tape. Pulling it in.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good. So, I'm a podcaster. I just thought I'd come out and check out the camp, see what's up.
What do you have in mind?
I don't know. Talk to some people, see what's going on.
You're with Bob Davis?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what I do is I have a little studio and I drive around and I...
So you're going to get some nice stories about this?
I don't know. We'll see. Just see what people are doing, what they're thinking, and
well, I mean, what are your intentions? Are you supporting, or what is?
Well, I don't believe in advocacy media, so what I do is I'm covering a story, find out what it is, find out what's going on.
Well, that's the whole thing about this.
Want people that are actually advocates to come out.
Because there's people could stir the whole information and all of that.
Well, I don't want to stir. I just want to.
Well,
you know,
I mean, that's the whole thing that a lot of people don't want to let that type of media in here like that.
What, you mean objective media?
Mainstream, I mean.
I'm not mainstream. A podcast, you know what a podcast is, right?
What is it?
It's internet radio. I mean, we're totally not mainstream media. It's just, this is not TV. I don't work for a big company. I work for myself.
Who do you want to talk to?
The media tent. Go up to the media tent and talk to the main people up there.
All right.
We'll let you know what happens.
Good to see you guys.
Yep.
I hope you stay warm.
Yeah.
See you later.
How long are you going to be with us? Where did they send you? Okay, so fish here actually.
She'll check you in. You have ID?
No.
You're going to need ID.
You mean like a media pass or?
No, like an identification.
Oh, I got that.
Okay, yeah. She'll be right with you.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
So we got through the gates, and here we are in the media tent, which is a brown tent with a sign outside that says Native Media Only, and you can hear the wind blowing. A little difficult to hear Isabella, who is the media coordinator, but this is a very interesting interchange between her and all of the people who are streaming in and out of there. I'm talking about media people coming in and out the whole time, and she's laying down what we can do and what we can't do.
Right on. Flag to bring up.
Okay, and if you need warmer clothing, please, it will get very cold in the next couple of days.
Okay.
So keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you soon. You're welcome. All right, you guys, take care. All right, Bob, give me a sec here.
Sure.
Hi, are you looking for a press pass?
Yes. We were here last month.
So if you could kindly start here on the first line. Thank you. And I will need your ID when you're ready, not this moment, but I'll need to say everybody's ID and then.
So are you in charge of the media? No?
No, I just sign people in.
Is there somebody that's in charge of
Currently, who's like the eyes and ears, they're not here.
Okay.
They're probably at a meeting someplace.
Floating around somewhere.
Do you have your license? Thank you. That's fine, I can see it. You don't have to do that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And you are with?
The Bob Davis Podcasts.
Oh, how handy.
Yeah.
And how long have you been doing that?
Since 2009.
Right on. You got many followers?
You know, it's hard to tell. We like to think that we have, but, you know.
Yeah, it's I guess that you can, you know, guesstimate.
Thousands.
Thousands, that's awesome. Get more now. And how long are you going to be with us?
I think I'm just going to be for the day, for a little while. Because I'm kind of passing through.
Okay, well, and if you're here till tomorrow, you're good.
Okay, great.
And I will just run down a couple of the ground rules, the expectations, the, you know, just kind of like things to stick to kind of thing. If you're going to talk to anybody or photograph them, please make sure you ask first, introduce yourself. Walk around a little bit, get a feel of the place. I know your time's limited, but it's not that spread out, really. The Red Warrior camp at the end of the row of flags is off limits. I mean, don't even try to walk in there or take pictures even from outside. They will most likely, it won't be well received, and they will escort you to the gate.
Okay.
There are children, they're probably in school right now, but minors, no photography of any minors or the school at any time, unless there happens to be a parent of that child right next to them. They're completely off limits, and anybody here's out to make a profit from the picture, film, because there have been some. We've been hearing people. I just got to say it. Great.
I'm giving you guys most of it, to be honest with you.
Right. Well, you can share it with Myron Dewey on Facebook.
Okay.
And he's the one that's kind of like, he has his a radio podcast called Digital Smoke Signals. Myron Dewey or Dallas and Dallas Goldtooth both daily do podcasts. And they're live streaming and they're trying to keep people informed of what's going on.
I do plan in the future airing some of the footage I shoot.
Okay.
And I did bring release forms.
Okay.
So is that are you guys good if I pull out?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I try to do.
Yeah, and
best,
if you could like maybe take a picture of the release forms, send them to Myron. So we can keep a record of them.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, because it's, we'll explain all that later.
Okay, fine. No problem.
It's technical with that.
Any questions?
I think I'm just going to walk down there, actually.
I mean, as long as you, I mean, you can walk down there and take a look.
Well, I'm not going to walk into the red.
No, just don't bring your phone out. Don't bring your camera, don't bring your phone out, because they'll think you're either recording or whatever.
Right.
Pictures. So absolutely no phones or
there's
camera.
So many things around here to take pictures of.
Yeah.
You don't have to go on the Red Warrior camp.
Yeah, no.
No, I don't. I wasn't intending to. I just, you know.
If you're just walking around.
So I just want to check it out.
Just keep it in mind that, you know, there are areas that are, if there's any ceremonies going on at any of the camps, praying or singing, those aren't to be photographed.
Can we record audio? No video, strictly audio. Like a, like down at the fire.
Unless you're invited expressly by someone and if they know and you have their permission, they're okay with it, then no.
Don't. So just basically nothing whatsoever. Don't.
Right.
Okay.
And whoever you encounter, you want to photograph or maybe do a mini interview.
That's pretty much what I want to do.
And you have your disclaimers.
So,
okay.
And I'm going to ask, it's...
And these passes need to be shown and out at all times.
Okay. Even if I don't have my camera with me? Or...
If I've given you one, it should be out.
Okay.
Just for own safety.
I just want to be... Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Peace and cues, whatever you want to call it.
Anything else?
Well, you could hear generators running all over the camp, gas generators, and there's one main fire, and this apparently is the sacred fire, and a woman there with a PA system is occasionally delivering sermons to everybody in the camp that is listening, or as far as I can tell, directives about what you can do or can't do around the fire.
On your knees, do not stand by the sacred fire. Don't go near it. Don't even be by it. And if you are really respectful, you wouldn't even be up here right now. You'd stay at your camp. So remember that. Keep that in mind. And be respectful of the Lakota and Dakota and Lakota people and all tribes. If you are on your moon, do not be near the sacred fire at all.
So the whole thing is I wanted to find somebody there at the camp who could talk with some authority about what the whole thing is and what they're doing and answer some of the questions that I got from Black Rock Fact Check, which may or may not be biased, as well as reading some articles about what has gone down with the pipeline protest. And so I was directed to Myron Dewey, and here is Myron's interview with me.
Who are you, just so I get that down?
Myron Dewey. Okay. In, Walker River Paiute tribe. Paiute and Shoshone.
And that's, you're from around here? Or?
My tribe is from the Walker River Paiute tribe in Nevada, and my mom's side is from the Bishop Paiute tribe.
Okay. So, let me just make sure I got everything going here right. So this is a very interesting group. I mean, is it, you know, looking forward to winter, what, how do you think this is going to go?
It's going to go good.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to fight the black snake, you know, whatever it takes.
So tell me about the whole protest and how it got started, because I'm kind of a little bit of a neophyte in terms of understanding the whole.
I think issue. you're a neocide because it's not a protest.
Oh, there you go.
We're protecting the water.
Okay.
And as a human being, I get, you know, we're on the same page, but we both like need water, right?
Right.
We both like water, and the world needs clean drinking water.
So this is about the pipeline, or is it about the water?
You know, we had the same issues in Nevada. You know, we're fighting the BLM and Forest Service from clear-cutting our trees.
Right.
And so these issues are heavy in Indian country, not just with my tribe, but many other tribes. But we have no water flowing to our river, and we've lost all our trout in our river.
So these here or in Nevada?
In Nevada.
Okay.
And so when I seen this happening, I just got back on a Peace and Dignity run. And I was kicking back there. We ran about 1,000 miles, me and my six-year-old son, Weetua. And I saw this run on Facebook, and I was thinking, well, it's kind of interesting because I just got off a prayer run, you know. So I wanted to see what it was like, what they were doing. And I started watching and hearing what they were saying. And I was thinking, wow, they're in a battle over there. And they were doing a call out. We need all relatives to come down and help us. And I started watching more and more, and when I first saw the chairman go through the barricade and go to jail, and all the relatives down there in support, I thought, you know what, I have to get there and show my support. It's one of the things, you know, when they were articulating it very well, we're protecting our water, not just our water, but the world's water.
So they don't want the pipeline because it's going to affect the water.
Well, it's not if the pipeline is going to crack; it's when.
Right.
We all know that. It's not 100% foolproof. And not only that, when you start to learn more about what they did in the pipeline, you know, by going in through sacred sites, skipping 15 miles ahead and knowingly bulldozing it, it's just every which way you can think about wrong, you know, just in a human sense.
Right.
But let alone the dozers driving it and then hiring. We're witnessing a corporation that militarized itself with contractors.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I was talking to the guys at the camp down the road. So what's that all about?
It's simple, you know. They brought dogs. They brought their military expertise and their training to sacred grounds that were desecrated, and continue to do that. This is what we witnessed. You know, I was up there doing a live stream. You know, I'm a filmmaker and a digital storyteller, and I thought to myself, you know what? This needs to be, the world needs to witness what is happening here. And that's when I just went live and witnessed and shared with the world what was happening, and did interviews and explained to all those things. So it was very powerful, and something that, you know, I think the world is witnessing that this is happening today in the 21st century, the second decade of the 21st century, still to indigenous people, to the lands.
I mean, so they're saying that the pipeline is being put up on private land. That they've made deals with private landowners, and that doesn't go through tribal land.
Well, it's going through sacred site, and this was tribal land way before Western contact.
But I mean,
because it's got a piece of paper and a little bit of ownership, and in a Western point of view, doesn't make it right. It's what's happening. This is still indigenous land of the Lakota, Nakota, Dakota people. The tribes that are around here know these hills, know these mountains, know these streams, know these the traditional foods. I mean, when you're tied to your land, you're connected to the land. And yeah, but we're dealing with Western contact, you know.
Right. But that's their. I'm just looking at their story. I'm not trying to argue.
I'm just looking
at their story,
yeah.
Which is we've got this thing's going to be on private land.
So you have to be specific with who is they.
Well, it would be fact checkers and you know the companies that are building the pipeline. Obviously, I mean they're saying, well, we've got agreements. This is on private land. It's not on tribal land.
Yeah, we got to be specific though. Which companies are you referring to?
I don't know where that came from.
So okay, well. We're looking at the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Right.
You know, I'm sure their investors don't realize what the company is doing on their behalf. if they found out what they were doing. Like if I was an investor, I would pull out knowing that these guys were desecrating sacred sites. A cemetery, the Indian people, the traditional people believe that a cemetery is a sacred site. What would people think if that's what, you know, we went through the Veterans Memorial, you know, just, you know, 15 miles down the road? What do you think? That would make national news.
So is that a cemetery, or is it people perceive it as a cemetery, is it actually a cemetery?
It is a sacred site.
Okay.
You know, defined by the people here, that is a sacred site. We don't have to explain it's a sacred site. When we say this is a sacred site, this is what it is.
Right. And so now I'm from Minnesota, where everyone's up in arms because of these oil trains. They're upset because of the oil trains. So then some of those people are proponents of the pipeline because they say that the oil trains are dangerous and, you know, causing all kinds of problems for them in where they live.
Yeah, this is a destructive climate change. We're witnessing it in our lifetime. You've seen it in your lifetime. I'm seeing it in my younger lifetime. This is happening, where you could drink out of any stream at one time, eat any fish. When we're kids and we're young, we probably remember those stories, and we don't have them no more in those areas because the water don't flow and the fish aren't there anymore. You know, in my tribe, I've witnessed all the agateca, the trout, gone in my lifetime. And this is now my son will not see it in his lifetime. The trees have been cut in my lifetime. He will not see it in his lifetime, the picking of, harvesting of pinus, nor will his grandson. That's how many generations that's going to take, you know, around 150 years. These are what we're witnessing. We have one earth, one air, one water. If we don't take care of our Mother Earth, this is what we're going to witness, is destructive climate change off of profit.
So no more drilling of oil then?
You know, you're here at the camp, Sacred Stones Camp, and you're witnessing we're off-grid. You got a off-grid unit right there that's funding the kitchen. You know, we went green. We're witnessing clean energy. We got solar. We got wind power. We got a homemade wind power. We got a little trike, you know, based off of wind power that goes around the camp. I mean, we're fighting this pipeline with wind power, clean energy. It's amazing. It's powerful.
How long do you think this is going to go?
Until it's done.
Now, I know there was something that happened in Bismarck with a governor or something.
Yeah.
You know, do they come out here or?
No. They don't. I don't think they have the respect in themselves.
Would they come out and just talk to you guys?
They haven't, that I noticed.
At all.
You now have a police force that's militarized.
This is the security.
This
people
is no. You had a
U.S.
corporate,
police force.
You had corporation that was militarized with cooperation of the police.
Right.
The police got their loan. They got their DOI money, and now they have militarized vehicles, militarized uniform.
Is this the county sheriff?
Yeah, Morton County, different counties around it. I mean, you can still tell we know they're untrained. You know, we see them, and they're like, you know, we're here to pray. We're not here to cause. We're armed with a song and a prayer.
Right.
And you know, when you look at them in the eye, all the women say it, they can't look at us in the face.
This land where this is happening, what is this?
Oh, this is the Lakota's traditional land.
Okay.
In the Fort Laramie Treaty, but predating that.
Where are all the tents and everything? This is tribal land right here?
Well, it's broken treaty land, from what I understand. And, you know, so that...
You got to educate me on that.
Yeah, we all need educating, you know, as when it comes to being taught incorrect history. You know, the red, white, and blue is not the American dream for indigenous people. That's blood. That's built on the graves of our ancestors, the bones of our ancestors, the young ones that have been molested by the church, you know, in boarding schools, and the nuns, and the schools, and boarding schools. It is not a proud history, and you have a huge long of that historical trauma with not just indigenous people, but America. So it's not easy when you hear presidential campaigns not talking about indigenous people.
Well, they're not talking about anything.
Yeah, we have to educate them. They're on Indian land. Yeah. Wherever they go in this country is Indian land.
So is that what you mean by broken treaty land? Or I'm just talking about land is.
It's what I'm sharing with you. Yeah,
okay.
It's broken treaty land built by the forefathers of this country. So, and we have a president in there that has an opportunity. He I don't know how mainstream media portrayed it, but they call it Pappas, right? Or it didn't mean anything because the Dakota Access is still working, even after he said they could not.
Where are they working? Where are they?
Well, from here, it's 20 miles away. So this is the the front lines. This is to prevent them from going through the river, contaminating the water, eventually.
So to close this whole thing, I wanted to end with an interview with someone in the oil industry. And just an employee for Baker Hughes, not a person who is a spokesperson for the company, but somebody who lives up in Williston and works in the industry. And I just wanted to get his perspective because he's inside a totally different tribe, if you will. You know, a group of people working in the oil industry and doing what they do, a little more, bit more knowledgeable than the average person. But it's interesting to hear his views on the Dakota Access Pipeline story.
Well, I've worked in the industry for a little bit more than 4 years. It was my first job out of college. I graduated from the University of North Dakota in 2012. And I run an analytical chemistry lab for Baker Hughes Oilfield Services.
Right.
For their upstream chemical or program, which is like treating existing production facilities like wells, tanks, pipes. We do like corrosion prevention stuff, scale prevention stuff, working with poisonous gases, trying to reduce stuff like that.
So you have some experience with you know, chemicals and with the possibility of dangers in the energy industry, yeah?
Very much so, yes.
So tell me what you know about the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Well, I mean, it's more than a casual. I'm more than a casual observer of the situation. I know from my opinion, it's a very important infrastructure project going on in our state right now, which would move about half or, you know, around 500,000 barrels a day of oil through a pipeline to production facilities in Illinois. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a very necessary project because we have a lot of oil being moved by train and truck right now, and in my opinion, according to DOT statistics, that's not a very safe way to do it.
What about these claims that the pipelines ruin the groundwater?
I mean, I'm not going to say that it's out of the absolute realm of possibility, but I mean, they do a lot. A lot is done to like not have that happen. And this isn't the first time that they've done this. There are currently 8 pipelines that cross the Missouri River upstream of that point, I believe. I could be wrong on that specific fact, but it's 90 feet below the bedrock. I believe they're double-walled pipe. I think they do it with Verizon, but I'm not exactly sure. But they have those remotely controlled and remotely monitored, so if they detect a problem, they have a 24-hour like command center that can shut that off pretty quick to prevent that. But as far as Standing Rock-specific water source,
yeah,
the water source that they're going to have is going to be 70 or so miles downstream after this year. The one that's kind of near where the pipeline crossing is right now, because like when the Missouri River and Garrison dam gets low and stuff like that, it's not all that reliable. So they're actually not going to use that one anymore, and they're moving to one that's further downstream, where if something were, which would be catastrophic if something did happen, but if it did, it would be mitigated as it's further downstream by that time.
Well, compare a little bit in terms of safety, pipeline versus transport by train. You don't hear them talk too much about trains transporting oil. And, you know, that's a big problem in the Twin Cities where I live, because now the oil trains are starting to cause traffic jams. I don't believe there's been too serious of a spill from an oil train, you know, in my neck of the woods. But why would a pipeline be worse than trucks and trains?
Well, in my opinion, it's not. I'm trying really hard to put myself on the other side of the argument here. You know, if they, for some reason, it went undetected. I'll give you an example. My old roommate here, his dad had a farm near Tioga, and that was a Tesoro pipeline spill in North Dakota, which I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was the worst pipeline spill in North Dakota in, I don't know, I think ever. His dad was driving through the field on his tractor, and all of a sudden, you know, all of a sudden saw like black stuff going in his tractor wheels or in the treads. And that was like the worst oil spill that they've ever had. I've happened. They're really happy with their mediation process. They've had no, no complaints really with how, considering, that it was an accident that happened. It wasn't that big a deal. Obviously, that's not a water source. But that went undetected for quite a while. And I forget how much of it is. But I suppose, the big thing concern you would have is for some reason it went undetected, you could potentially have a larger amount.
Right.
Than what would be on a train. That would be my guess. But, I mean, you can look at DOT statistics. Trains have accidents a lot more than the oil pipelines leak.
Have you been able to visit what they're calling, they don't want to call it a protest, but everyone's calling it the pipeline protest. Have you had a chance to go down?
No, I have not.
Is there anything that you would say to them if you visit? I mean, they're very, very earnest people. I mean, they're serious about what they're saying, but what would you say to them?
The crux of the issue is it's not being left in the ground. It's not going to be left in the ground. We have to remove that oil from the state of North Dakota because we don't have refinery capacity, and we're not going to because you can't get a... It's pretty darn tough to get a permit approved for a refinery facility, especially it's probably more tough now that you can't even get one approved for the pipeline. So it has to be removed safely. We have had so many oil field-related traffic accidents that result in death. People are distracted drivers these days. They're down looking at their phone, and then they go over to the median. And historically in North Dakota, you look up and you might hit a pheasant or see an empty lane. And now there's a fully loaded crude oil tanker come. And I don't care how big your truck is, you're not going to win that.
Well, that's true.
It's a safety issue. Highway 85 was... Highway 85 was such a dangerous road in the last few years. They're doing things to try and make the road safer and stuff like that. But inherently, as long as you have, X amount percent of your truck hauling crude oil instead of it being moved by pipeline, it's going to be a dangerous deal. With the train traffic, that's dangerous. As far as I'm concerned, those trains are over... Our railways are over capacity. And it affects, all of our other markets in North Dakota, too, particularly agriculture. They have trouble getting their, their seed in time, fertilizer. It increases the rates and the sale prices go up for input costs for farmers. It's a pretty widespread deal. It's pretty widespread effects. And it's going to go... That oil's coming out of the ground. It has to go out the safest way. They can say that they're protecting my environment, but, I can... The Dakota Access Pipeline already crosses and has already been pressure tested, to my knowledge, somewhere between 8 and 14 miles upstream of Williston, North Dakota's water source. So it's not like I'm just saying, to hell with you because it's yours.
Right.
It's already affected my environment. So it's not just in your backyard, not my backyard. It's already in my backyard.
And you were just hunting, too. So you're hunting around there, I would assume.
Yeah, well, a little bit north. I was up in Crosby, Fortuna, Divide County area.
Right.
A little bit quieter up there. We couldn't have had any better experience with the environment up there. Just because I worked for an oil company, I didn't put on a to hell with it cap and stuff like that. We've checked water to see if there's been oil spilled in it and stuff like that. And it's a big deal, and we treat it like that. And I personally do. I've been a lifelong North Dakotan, and I plan on being one. I don't want anything bad to happen to the state.
Like many local issues, this one has lots and lots of nooks and crannies, and people generally advocating for the little guy, quote-unquote little guy. And sometimes it's corporations, and sometimes it's neighbors. Sometimes it's people that don't want the roundabout or don't want the light rail or don't want the pipeline through, quote-unquote, their backyard. They will throw all sorts of arguments at you, and it's up to you to run most of them down. I did the best I could on short notice. The way I'm doing travel podcasts now is I don't want to just drive through an area. If I can find a story in an area that is interesting, I will try to get that. And it's a lot more fun because it gives me a purpose for the podcast. So that's what I'm going to be doing. So thanks for listening to Podcast 558. Don't forget Brush Studio in the West End. They can make your corporate event great. They can help you team build. Let me give you the number. I got to reach over and grab the paper. because I got their numbers right there on the on the copy. 952-236-1700. That's 952-236-1700. Brush Studio. Also check them out at brushstudio.net or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page. That will take you to their Facebook page. There's some great video on there about what they're doing. I think it's a great potential corporate team building event for your company. Also, thanks to the digital sponsor, the BobDavisPodcast.com. Pilots, if you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. You've heard me talk about it. Bottom line is Alpha Systems saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page for more info on Alpha Systems and Pilots. Good luck. Now, from here, it is on all the way through North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, and the state of Washington to Seattle, all the way down the Pacific Coast Highway from Seattle through, you know, Oregon and San Francisco down to Los Angeles and then over to Phoenix. And I really need donations through PayPal for mobile podcast command. So to that end, I've already gotten a couple of them. Paul Widmer sent me $100. That went right in the tank. And let's see. Somebody from No Name LLC, I have no idea who that is, sent me $20. Really appreciate that. I mentioned earlier, who was that? I feel really... Ed Nass sent me like $5, $20, and then somebody named... well, it's Chrissia Lundberg, but it's not Chrissia. Sent like $5 or something. Every cent is appreciated when we're on the road. It all goes into the tank for mobile podcast command. More podcast coming from the Northwest Mega Trip 2016, the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 558. Thanks for listening on Stitcher, iTunes, blogtalkradio.com, Tuned In, GCNLive.com for the radio show, and of course, The Patriot at 11 p.m. on Sundays for the radio show, the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show, and the streaming right off the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. All right, it's time to get back in and start driving. Thanks for listening. Podcast 558.